I've come into contact with a lot of people. I remember there was a very close family friend just before the last election, not this last one, but the previous one. Her diagnosis was perhaps, I think, three months before she actually died. And so I actually saw the stages and the progression of the disease. And she had not been aware that she had been living with the cancer for quite some time. And even presently, I mean, a lot of the support that I'm getting is actually from constituents reaching out to me now who are living with the condition. And, you know, they're offering their support. The positivity that I think Ms. Bishop has expressed is something which I think augurs well for fighting the condition as well and fighting the disease, because, you know, you can't give in, you can't surrender, regardless of what they say in terms of the treatments and what could happen or what may not happen. What I have found is that the people who have been able to survive and get on with their lives are the people who have basically said, you know, cancer will not get the better of me. And that has been borne out throughout the constituency and everyone that I've encountered who has survived.
As an MP, though, you need to share with us what are the difficulties and the challenges that an MP can encounter in trying to respond to the difficulties and concerns that patients and people in your constituency may present to you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it generally, I mean, one of the points that was made earlier is the availability sometimes of the medication on island or even the availability of the tests that are necessary. And I think people have those genuine concerns in terms of, are they going to be able to have the adequate care provided by the healthcare system in Barbados? What I've also seen is the challenges that people have looking after persons who are dying from cancer as well, because you have a situation where, you know, through national assistance, you know, and even other institutions who may be able to provide the care, sometimes people in my community cannot afford to have persons come into the home to provide those services. So if people are barely trying to make ends meet and then they are facing a family member who is suffering with this condition, it can be very challenging financially to be able to provide adequate care for those persons.
Where can they turn to, Deanne Sobers? Where can people turn when it comes to this whole question of care? Because the costs, sometimes people need more, almost round-the-clock care. Mm-hmm. And in Barbados, that is becoming astronomical in price.
Yes, it is. We have nurses who go into the homes. They're given a stipend because we really can't afford the high cost of providing a registered nurse per day. And those nurses,
who pays them?
We give the nurses a stipend. It's not a salary. It's a stipend. The nurses volunteer with the association, and the stipend covers bus fare and incidentals.
But you have to get that stipend from somewhere.
Yeah, we get donations from certain places on the island, or maybe the family of the deceased would give us a donation after death. We'd be doing some fundraising. We'd be having a yearly concert. And then when we have our conferences, we'd be working with BAMP, the Medical Association, to assist us with some of those conferences. But again, donations, fundraising is where we get our funds. From our resources, such as Pampers, or those things are donated to us again by family members. But one of the things about the costs within the home, when you speak about, like, maybe oxygen, if the family is in the home and need oxygen, then that's going to be rather expensive, unless it is recommended through the Queen Elizabeth Hospital.
How expensive is
it? It's $100 per bottle, and if they're using three of those bottles per day, that's $300 a day just for the oxygen alone. The doctors who volunteer with us may be at the cost, depends on what is being done. If an IV has to be started in the home, if a catheter has to be in certain procedures, well, then we would have to cover the cost, or the family will cover the cost. Let me add something in terms of costs within the providing of care in the home. There is an organization by the name of the Barbados Association for Cancer Advocacy is hoping or starting to build a hospice here in Barbados at St. David's Christ Church, working with the Liver Waters Association. And we strongly believe that that hospice would help a lot of those persons in which the environment cannot accommodate palliative care. And now we had a patient who resided in the north, wouldn't say which parish, and there was no indoor facilities, and the electricity was a challenge. The home was small and you could not place O2 in that house, oxygen in the home. So by the consent of the Queen Elizabeth physician at the hospital, that person was admitted. Now, it would have been ideal for the patient to stay home with their family or to be in a hospice, at least to be able to give them the opportunity to spend time in their last days. The importance of, I love you, please forgive me, thank you, is so important in a close-knit family when the person is about to die. Those are very, very important things that we push on, which is called the reconciliation period. I've done this, I wish I'd done that. The integrity versus the despair. I'm happy that I am, thank you for loving me. All these kind of things is done in a home setting or in a hospice setting. Within the hospital setting, although part of the palliative care may be given in the hospital, there are 6 beds in each bay on either side. And I would have to bend down to Ed to tell Ed, certain mm-hmm. things, mm-hmm. private things that I want to say. And my voice may be already low, but if we were in a room by ourselves at home, I could say to you, the bank book is under the bed, those kind of things. The private information that I want to give my family is not always possible within the hospital setting. So it would be ideal within the hospice setting or within the home setting. And the other thing about the home setting, I can open the windows and have all the breeze. I can scream as I want to. I can do everything that I want. I can have a bit of soup today. I can have a bit of sago today, tapioca. The hospital setting is not that I can order what I feel like eating today. The dietitian gives me a meal, but I may not feel like eating that. I know that families have been bringing soup and certain things that the patient desires in the hospital. But again, the home setting is ideal. But the cost, although there's a cost, we try as much as possible to make sure that that person receives palliative care in the home once the environment is suitable.
Given what is happening in Barbados at the moment, though, with respect to the economy, mm-hmm. people looking at this problem would be quite fearful about where we're going because the costs are escalating, disposable income is contracting, and you wonder, where are we going to go with a problem like this? The insurance industry must be looking at it, Ed Clark.
Yes, we are. I mean, we are also looking at a senior living home and long-term care facility ourselves on a bigger scale. Mm-hmm. But it is a cause of concern.
Where are you with that?
Well, the plans have been approved by the town planning. And we hope to kick it off in 2019. That's the plan.
Refresh our memories as to exactly what you have in mind.
It's going to be a senior living community, a well-recognized brand, international-based support mechanism and operating mechanism. And it will raise the standard of caregiving. And that is a big aim for us.
If you begin in 2019 as proposed, when do you anticipate that it is supposed to be ending?
Take about 2 years. It's going to be built in modules. So we will build, because it's quite a large facility, as you can understand. And we'll start with their different blocks of it, and then build out more of the residential type things in the end. But the caregiving one, I can't remember the exact dates and so on, but it is going to be, the construction will probably be over an 18-month period, David. It's quite a large facility, as you can understand. The hospital side, no, we haven't gotten that far into the details, and that's going to be a little further out because that's going to take a lot of work to get everything set up for that.
That's Ed Clark of SagiCor. When we come back to this focus on caring for cancer patients in Barbados, we are going to open up the telephone lines to you. Call us at 43-41-790. We still have Santia Bradshaw on the line, Dr. Cambridge Maxwell. We have Deanne Sobers, Ed Clark, and Mr. Selwyn Ferdinand, a senior consultant surgeon at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, with us.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials. So building supplies, big or small, and brilliant
metals, we have it all. And brilliant metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Good afternoon. Welcome to a caller. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
And to your guest.
It's just afternoon, though. It's a minute past now.
Good afternoon, sorry. Good afternoon.
Yes.
And I want to, to Minister Branshaw, I want to wish her well in her health. I have some questions. I want to know if the roof, if any houses in the pine has on asbestos roof. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. If there are any houses in the pine with asbestos roofs and?
And my other question is to the doctors now. I want to know what triggers cancer cell and what is programmed cell death. I want them to ask.
What is programmed?
Programmed cell death.
Self death?
Yes.
Cell death.
Cell death?
Cell death.
Yes.
Okay, anybody knows about that program?
Well, she has two questions of the doctors. What causes cancer? There's a long and a short answer. The short answer is we don't know. And the long answer is we can try to explain. We know that it is an abnormality of the genetic expression that takes place in every cell in the body. And sometimes when patients ask me how I get that, I say to them, well, okay, what caused you to start having a menstrual period, for instance? Something happened that is dictated by activity that is going on in your body that is affecting cells in certain organs and allows normal things to take place. Well, that same kind of activity may allow abnormal cells to take place. And these abnormal cells are, when they grow wherever they are what we call cancer. So what actually triggers it, we don't really know. But we are beginning to understand more and more about what the changes are. What are the effects of the actions of genes in the human body that lead to abnormal cells and to cancer? What is programmed cell death? Well, in just about every organ of the body, cells live for a certain time and then they die off and so on. And that is partly what programmed cell death is. The cell has come to the end of its useful life. It has done what it's supposed to do and it dies off. What tends to happen in some cases is if they don't die off, then you get an abnormal cell that may be continuing, which may cause problems. I hope that answers your question.
And she did raise this question of asbestos roofs. And there's always the question of a number of the properties which were built by the National Housing Corporation continue to have asbestos roofs. And I doubt very much that the pine would have been left out in that regard. But I think the natural link, therefore, is between the asbestos roof and cancer. Is there anyone who can address that particular issue? Because there are other properties across Barbados where the roofs still stand. Now, we've had a lot of discussion about what happens when you're trying to remove the asbestos and the precautions that you have to take. But are there dangers inherent in keeping the asbestos on the roofs? Is there any establishment?
There are a number of reports about a condition which is related to exposure to asbestos and the asbestos dust. Whether having an asbestos roof puts you at higher risk in that kind of an exposure, I'm not sure. The asbestos dust is the particular size fragment that gets into your airways and causes a chronic inflammation down into the airways that sets up the problem in there. But I haven't looked at that as an issue for me to be able to address in any significant way.
Okay, let's take another call. Hello? Brass Tack Sunday. Good morning. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir.
Yes.
Okay, I want to ask a question to the insurance agent.
Go ahead.
If you were a parent of health insurance and you took sick, when you catch yourself that you could think you call to pay forward what you had before and continue paying, and the person that you ask about it would tell you you can't pay the money, you can't pay in the money, they would have to find out, and even so, you're going to be soon 65. How, and a person just get callous-minded, and so all that you have paid before has gone for nothing. What would you say to a person like that?
Are you talking about a health insurance policy or a life insurance policy?
Yes, sir.
Health?
Health.
Health. And you're saying that this person had a policy and stopped paying the policy?
Pardon me?
Did the person stop paying the premium for the policy?
Yes, because when they tried to find out, right? When they tried to find out, after they recuperated a little and could have seen them, they were able to pay the money that was...
That was due.
Hello?
Hello.
Sorry, one of the lines dropped
Hello?
Out. A line dropped out. Just stay on the line. Yes, you were saying.
Right.
Right. So after they see that they could have paid the money that was owed.
Okay.
And you called and you were told by a receptionist or whatever, she would put you on to, I can't remember what she called the person's name.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And this lady came on the line and you explained your situation to them. And they said, they would find out from somebody and call you back. When the person did call you back, they said to you, you can't pay
yeah.
the money that you had owed before. And even so, you are soon going to be 65. This was just a couple of months before you were 65 years.
Yeah, well, the thing is that if you had a policy and you stopped paying the premium, the policy has lapsed. And then if you can't just join back the policy a few months down the road, that, you know, insurance companies can't allow that, because it then becomes anti-selection, because certain people, something called anti-selection in the insurance industry, certain people may use that as an opportunity to only join back when they know they're ill. So insurance, we can't manage the insurance risk like that. That's the whole issue. So if you stop paying your premium, you can reapply and have it reassessed. But you can't just stop paying for 6 months or so and then ask to start back paying if you know that you're ill. Unfortunately, we can't operate
like that. No, the person could have at least said, well, look, what you just said, whatever, but you would have to reapply or something mm-hmm. like that, so the person
right.
would have to go on, but they just...
Yeah. Well, I think what you should do is...
Even though you're 65, and that was the end of the story.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, it depends. Certain companies may have age limits on the policies when you could join a policy. So that's something else. I am not aware of the details of the particular policy, but you might have to contact the company themselves. I don't know who it is. If it is us, but you can contact us at the office and let somebody walk through what are the actual rules of the policy.
But this is linked to the general concern about what happens to elderly persons and insurance, health insurance in the country. It is considered to be exceedingly difficult.
Well, David, I think BARP, as you know, just the insurance companies, three of us got together and formed a partnership where we now cover BARP's members after a couple of years of trying to put something together. Health insurance, you know, is risk management. And as Mr. Ferdinand said earlier, the aging population shows that the prevalence of these illnesses are higher. But we were very happy to be able to work with BARP and get the policy in place. I think we have over 9,000 people have joined up on that program, and it continues to grow. So we are looking forward to a successful partnership with BARP. The issue is, you know, is that you start a program and you basically, the pricing of any insurance policy is done on performance. So you estimate where you're going to be over a period of time. So we are hoping that the program works successfully, because it has been a problem in the past because of the premiums having to go up and go up and go up because of the high what we call in insurance industry, high loss ratio, which is basically a high claim, incidence of claims. But the large numbers, the more volume you have, the risk is spread more better for whoever's carrying the risk. So I think by having 9,000 members, we are hopeful that this will now make it a successful program. And I think the many of the bar members are very happy to have the cover, and I really have encouraged numerous people to take it up because I think it's an excellent opportunity to have healthcare right through to 99. You know, it's basically a very good program for them.
I want to say that Minister Bradshaw spoke about early detection. And we have some persons that will not visit doctors for years until they become ill. They do not go and get an annual physical. Although there's nothing, they say, I don't have any pain or anything like that. This thing, pancreatic cancer, we've had experience whereby person said, I'm feeling fine and all of that. Weight loss, examination, pancreatic cancer. Or I didn't need a doctor for years. I've been walking around feeling fit. I exercise and all of this. And then people do not go and get their physicals, yearly physicals. And they need to do that.
Well, thank you very much to the caller for raising that question. We promised you that we would hear from a prominent researcher in the area of cancer, in Dr. Juliet Daniel. She was born in Barbados and is currently associate professor in the Department of Biology at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Now, she's had a long and strong interest in cancer research, and one of the significant achievements is considered her most significant discovery to date in the cancer biology field was her discovery and naming of a new gene called Kaiso, coined from the Caribbean, Calypso. Now, Dr. Daniel, thanks for joining us here in this discussion, because we really wanted to get a sense of what is happening in places like Canada and the United States with respect to the availability of treatment, but also you can help us in giving some sense of what is happening with respect to research in the area. Welcome to Brasstack Sunday. Hello? Just check that she hasn't dropped out, because we can get back to her. In the meantime, let's take another call. Down to Brasstack. Hello? Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon. I'm ringing from the UK, and I've been tuned in from the beginning of the show, so I've heard Stantia and I've heard some of the other physicians that you've got on the panel there today. And so I just wanted to share my experience, because like Stantia, I was diagnosed with breast cancer in June, so not that long ago. And part of the service here in the UK is that we have the National Health Service, so there's no need to have monthly subscriptions. You automatically are part of that facility for any medical health care that you may need once you become sick. And so what I've experienced on this journey since being diagnosed, which hasn't been a long period of time because it's only been since the 8th of June, is that the National Health Service not only deals with the cancer, so the illness itself, it deals very much with the person. And I say that because not only on diagnosis was I given a breast cancer counselling nurse immediately once that diagnosis was given, I was also given a psychologist to help me deal with the mental aspect of what this illness potentially could or would do to me as I go on this journey. And so I was just curious to establish whether people in Barbados, and maybe more so women than men, because as part of the National Health Service, women are given, or men, are given the option to have a wig made, because a lot of your hair can be a lot of yourself. And so just curious to see what other support mechanisms are given to people that are diagnosed to help them to cope, but also to help them on that journey. Because for some people, for me, it's a 12-month journey before I stop receiving care based on what they've discovered and how they're going to treat it. But it's interesting because when people generally talk about cancer, you know that they're having to undergo either chemo or radiotherapy. But it's the other things like the psychologist, like the breast counselling nurse that we have as a package here in the UK that really, really digs deep into supporting you as an individual.
You asked the question, what is available? Some people would ask.
Yeah, just out of curiosity.
And if it is already available, is it threatened because of the economic circumstances? What is available? Yes. The answer
was, once a person has been diagnosed with a life-threatening disease, they're referred to, and I know this happens in the hospital, the psychologist and the psychiatrist. I know it happens. And also refer to the bereavement support services and the palliative care for counseling. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why I mentioned at the beginning of the program that BAMP has been encouraging their physicians to spend more time with the patient once they have been diagnosed with a life-threatening disease. And I know that that is happening here in Barbados. So yes, it's available. One of the things, though, that you must remember is that once the diagnosis has been given and the fear is there, you would hear the patient says, I need to speak to my children, I need to speak to my spouse, if the person's not in the room with you. And this is why it is encouraged that when you have had that test and you're returning for the results, take someone with you. Always take someone with you. The news is never given to you standing up. But I must say that once the doctor says, Mrs. Jones or Mr. Jones, we need to, could you come in to see me today? Immediately, even although the test is negative, there is fear. There's a lot of plans, a lot of things already, you know, what to do with this and what to do with that. And they haven't even been given the results yet. So yes, ma'am, there are systems on the island available for counseling for those who have been given. And not only adults, also children. I think sometimes we forget the children that have been diagnosed with life-threatening disease, because the parents have to deal with the child has to deal with that. In terms of mommy, how long, and let me add that we're also going to be doing a seminar for children on the 12th of November at St. Paul's Anglican Church. And we've invited medical, legal, and the question that has been asked, at what age can a child tell you, mommy, I don't want any more chemo, mommy, I don't want any more radiation, mommy, why am I hurting so badly? How do you answer the children's questions? Most of those children remain in the hospital in terms of either PICU, NICU, C7 or C12. And the parent sits with that child every day, depends on the degree of illness. They're crying for the pain, what can I do, the questions. Is the medical profession doing what they should do? Is the correct diagnosis being given, all of that. So we're going to look at that on the 12th of November from 6:30 in the evening until 8:30 at St. Paul's Anglican Church.
Let's take another call. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
This is Dr. Lane. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Great. I'm Dr. Edward Lane from Atlanta. You guys may have known me as the Honorary Consulate in Atlanta, but I'm also a gastroenterologist about 30 years up in Atlanta. I want to first compliment you on this program. I've been listening this morning. I'm over at Ms. Motley, and I've been listening in because I wanted to listen to the Minister Bradshaw. You've covered some really important topics on this program, and the audience should know that you've covered many of the most important aspects of the diagnosis, the treatment, and some of the genetic aspects of breast cancer. My wife is a 20-year survivor, so everyone out there should know that there's hope, right? The other thing that I would like to ask you, though, is you've not touched on the couple of selected aspects that I would like you to touch on, the panel, One is the preventive aspects, and from the point of view of nutrition, and then from the point of view of the Strategy Corps people who are on the panel, I'd like to know, are they looking at any of the with their patient population in terms of reducing their economic risk of doing what we are doing, some of in the States now, trying to help the patients understand prevention and the things that they should do in terms of their nutrition and other preventive aspects of general preventive aspects for cancer.
Now, so before they answer you, I think you can answer a question for us as well. And that has to do with support. You say that your wife has been a cancer survivor now for 20 years.
That's correct.
What has that meant for you as a partner? Adjusting to that, living with it, supporting her?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. At first, of course, as the previous caller said, there's just devastation. I can't believe this has happened to me phenomenon, right? And then you have to gather the family around you and first to chat with the children and the spouse. And then clicking the support around the family, around the member, the patient that actually has the cancer, everything has to be directed.
What has been the most challenging part of living and adjusting to this as a spouse?
So, as a spouse, you have to, first of all, my wife had bilateral mastectomies because the oncologist on the panel will know that was recommended because she had absolutely no family history, but she'd taken birth control pills for several years, and they thought that might have been one of the precipitating.
So bilateral mastectomy meaning she's lost both breasts?
That's correct. And so you have to be very certain that you deal with you help her to deal with her self-image, because for a woman that poses a real self-image problem, right? And you have to, of course, the males in the family and the other family members have to click in and be extremely supportive, and let the patient know that she's a patient, she's a person, and not just two breasts, right? So that's a real challenge on the front end, and the male partner has to be extremely supportive, and then explain to the children, young children especially, who may not understand why mommy doesn't have breasts anymore. I think so. That is if you ask me what was the main, the hardest problem, for the husband thinking about the wife and how to support her, because you understand what she's going through, and so that's an important factor.
Frustrations?
Frustration? Some, because, you know, it's very difficult for the wife to just suddenly become a woman without breast, and so you have to reassure her that she's important, and all of her all parts of her are important, and that the breasts are only just one factor in her, and you continue to love her and so on. So that's important. There's some frustration in dealing with that on the front end, but it's just a matter of support. You have the males especially have to be, male in the partnership has to be extremely supportive.
To the doctors of the panel, the whole question of nutrition, though, because in a lot of the discussion that we've heard surrounding cancer, there has been the suggestion that people have had to change lifestyle and that their eating habits would have had to change. Is that a real factor? Is it really necessary? Or is that something that is just promoted by people who want to sell certain products?
Yes and no. Studies have shown that persons adopting a low-protein, high-fiber diet tend to do better in terms of their response to treatment, in terms of cancer prevention in the first place, and how well and how long we live. There are a lot of misinformation out there. There is a lot of misinformation out there with respect to when you're diagnosed with cancer, you have to stop eating all meat immediately. You have to stop eating sugar, no sugar at all, and it's very dangerous to be telling people this, especially people who are confused, people who want to do the best that they can. People tend to try to listen to everybody and want to do everything at once, and it's more dangerous, especially telling persons not to use any sugar at all. We know that that is not true. We do not tell patients that at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. We do not have these studies to support that. It is true that added sugars, refined sugars, are unhealthy for you, but we still need to have the sugar that is good for you, sugar in the fruits, and so on, sugar to give us energy, to break down, to give us glucose. It is a form of carbohydrate, and that is healthy, and that is why within the last year, we now have a dietitian assigned to the Oncology and Nuclear Medicine Department. Patients always ask us, what can I eat, what can I not eat? Apart from giving them our bit of advice, we always refer them to the dietitian. So every new patient to the department sees the dietitian and gets a personal protocol for them. Their height and weight is taken, the dietitian looks at their labs and determines the best diet for them individually.
Mr. Lane, from the point of view of the insurance company, I think Mr. Lane mentioned to you, Mr. Clark, the question of prevention and whether the insurers were looking
at
that.
What we are doing. Well, in that regard, I mean, we do cover preventive visits and so on, you know. I think one of the big issues that many people are facing is the whole wellness and education, you know, education of the population in Barbados to health and wellness. And we have just started our own mobile unit to go to our clients and go to some of the larger events that are being held in Barbados to have our nurse, and we're on like a nutritionist to where people can come in and speak and have their tests done and so on. We take this unit over to large companies. A lot of people, you'll be surprised, don't have the preventative visits annually, although the facility is there. So when some of these tests are done, the basic tests are done, some of the people realize, well, I'm not as healthy as I thought I was, you know? And these are people from all walks of life, you know? So it's people that can afford to go and see the doctor. So it makes them more aware. But generally speaking, David and Dr. Lane, the issue of nutrition and wellness, improving the wellness of the population in Barbados, is essential. That comes through continuous education, communication of social media and so on. And we got to use it and make the most of it at this time.
Well, we are talking about caring, cancer care in Barbados. And when we come back, we are going to explore this subject a little further up until 1:15. Today's edition of Brass Tacks Sunday is coming to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.